White House protesters say no to war without end, and the Dalit people of India and South Asia, oppressed by a caste system as untouchables, converge on the DMV in a historic conference and demonstration. All that and more coming up next. Welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for March 26, 2015, on WPFW Washington 89.3, your station for jazz and justice here in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. Well, spring is in the air. It's a rainy spring day today, but it's still a time of rebirth, a time when many marchers are in the streets again with renewed passion for social justice. We'll go outside the White House, where under the banner of Spring Rising, a coalition marked on Saturday the 12th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq and the 5th anniversary of the invasion of Libya. Both countries have been destroyed. And some researchers say that more than 1 million, maybe even 2 million Iraqis and other people in the region have been killed. Also, an historic demonstration took place organized by the Dalit people, the black people of South Asia. As always, we have a lot packed into less than an hour, starting with headlines and happenings. Well, that spring activism is definitely in full effect in D.C., today alone, get out your pen or your notes app on your phone. Happening until 3 p.m., the organization One DC is holding a conference on equitable development in D.C. Sustainability from Below is bringing together residents of neighborhoods throughout Washington, D.C., organizers, students, scholars, elected officials, and others who are engaged in efforts to create sustainable, equitable grassroots development and more opportunities for wealth accumulation for residents of traditionally underserved communities, many of whom are experiencing rapid gentrification and displacement. The conference is at the George Washington University Kafritz Conference Center at 821st Street Northwest. 1DC.org has all the info. Happening now until 4:30 p.m., there's a major conference on reforming America's broken criminal justice system underway at the Merritt Washington Wardman Park in Woodley Park. And more information about that is at bipartisansummit.org. At 5 p.m., members of the IOTC 43 D.C. Coalition will be holding a vigil in front of the Mexican embassy to mark 6 months since the Ayotzinapa students went missing. The vigil will be followed by a march to the U.S. Department of State building at 1911 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest. And tonight, beginning at 6 p.m., Clergy Against All Killing present a program featuring professor, writer, and activist Angela Davis at Matthews Memorial Baptist Church, 2616 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue in Southeast. And for more information, you can call 202-698-1456. Next week, Power DC, the coalition opposing the takeover of Pepco by the nuclear giant Exelon, is urging us to attend a public hearing that will be held on Monday, March 30th at 10 a.m. Exelon CEO Chris Crane will testify before the DC Public Service Commission about his company's effort to take over Pepco. Power DC says we need to be there to keep Crane and Exelon honest. They say that Exelon has a history of playing fast and loose with the truth in a brief filed to the Maryland Public Service Commission. Maryland's Attorney General called the testimony of an Exelon official unreliable, not credible, and fundamentally flawed. The coalition says the proposed merger is bad for D.C. residents. It means higher electric bills, lower reliability, and less renewable energy. More than 1,000 D.C. residents have sent comments to the Public Service Commission to oppose the merger. So that's this Monday, March 30th at 10 a.m. at 1333 H Street, Suite 200. And you should go to Power D.C. for more information, including RSVP or information. And finally, in our culture and media moment, Kimon Freeman's play Angry Black Man in Therapy for Whites Only is still in dramatic reading tonight at the 14th and V Busboys and Poets beginning at 8 p.m. And the Venezuelan musicians Bitoya perform starting at 9 p.m. tonight at the Beer Baron Tavern, 1523 22nd Street in Northwest. And those are our headlines and happenings today. When we come back, Voices Against War Without End. We'll be right back.
Oh, yes, I, Victoria. Victoria, my cochero.
¿Qué fue que le pasó a la negra pantera? ¿Qué condimento extraño dieron a los hippies? Le dieron el SD con la super marihuana creepy. Y un poco de cosas más para quitarle los fieras. Para que actuaran y andaran como uno más. Poder borrar la historia, vender sus modas. Y los que nada saben queden así nada más. Y las marcas y películas se lleven la luca.
Ranas poderosas de la doña Amazona pueden curar ampliamente o dejar en coma. Pero las farmacéuticas que se las roban, inventan enfermedades y trafican unas tomas. Estudian en las culturas,
profanadores,
andan por tierras santas de los ancestros. Ramas solo inventaron
la salsa al peto
y dicen ser muy cultos
los taladradores.
That was Bitoya on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. Well, On the Ground was outside the White House on Saturday, where Spring Rising marked the 12th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq and the 5th anniversary of the invasion of Libya. Both countries have been destroyed, and researchers now say actually up to 2 million Iraqis and other people in that region may have been killed since the start of the illegal invasion and occupation. After this anti-war coalition ended its rally and went marching, dropping symbolic wooden coffins at the Capitol Hill and in front of offices of various war contractors and profiteers, an historic demonstration then took place at the White House, organized by the Dalit people of South Asia. But let's start with Spring Rising and the voices of activists, including Carl Dix, David Swanson, and Cindy Sheehan.
Iteration of the war in Iraq is a continuation of something. Not only of decades of attacking the people of Iraq, but imperialist wars that predate that. I know this because I got drafted back in the 1960s. I got orders to go to Vietnam, but I was able to find out what the deal was and become part of the largest mass refusal of GIs to go to Vietnam, the Fort Lewis Six. And I did my time in Leavenworth Military Penitentiary. That's the kind of stand that people need to take around imperialist wars. Refuse to fight them, refuse to support them. Now let me say this about this latest iteration. Because Obama justifies this by saying, well, we got to deal with ISIS, and ISIS is evil. I got two things to say about that. First off, the U.S. is wreaking much more devastation on the people of the world than ISIS ever could. That's the first thing. But the second thing is it is just ugly hypocrisy for a country where regularly black people used to be lynched in public ceremonies, their bodies mutilated, and often roasted alive. All throughout the southeastern United States, and no one was ever punished for doing that. That's what this country rests on, and they got no right to talk about anybody being evil. Okay, now those horrors that I just talked about, those lynchings, they continue but in different form. No longer is it white lynch mobs and the Ku Klux Klan, it is police departments all across this country murdering black and Latino people. And what brings this together with standing against the wars being waged on people in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, and everywhere else this government is doing it, is that they are all rooted in this capitalist imperialist system and the U.S. imperialist empire. We must stand against it. It's going to take revolution, nothing less, to end it once and for all. And we need to be in the streets around it, including Tuesday, April 14th. Disrupt business as usual to say that police murder of black and Latino people must stop. Get some of these cards. Get stickers. Spread the word. Stop the imperialist aggression around the world and the aggression they have wreaking on people here in the cities of this country. Thank you, sisters and brothers.
Who is one of the most stalwart activists in this country and who absolutely is someone we need to give a rousing reception to. Please welcome Cindy Sheehan.
Hey, Dave Robinson from Brooklyn. I see you. Is anybody out there? Let's make some noise. Let's tell that war criminal in the whorehouse, I mean the White House, how we feel. And I want to apologize to all the sex workers out there. Anyway, so here we are again. The 12th anniversary of shocking and awful. But that's not the first bombing of Iraq. The United States has been bombing Iraq through four administrations since 1991. Now they want to bomb Iraq more. Obama has asked for authorization to use more military force against Iraq. And the only thing that causes is more violence and more destabilization. You can't bomb people into submission. The country is in tatters, and let's talk about another country in tatters. In 2010, we were out here. We were protesting the invasion of Iraq, and the maniacs, the war criminals in the U.S. government started bombing Libya. Now that country is in tatters. You know, I hate to say this. No, I don't. I was lying when I said I hate to say this. But I've been speaking for 45 seconds at least. I haven't said one F word yet. Yay, Cindy! But anyway, if McCain or Romney, if they were bombing six or seven or eight countries like Obama is, if they were threatening Russia like Obama is, if they said that Venezuela was a national threat to the United States, raise your hand if you stay up at night worried that there's a Venezuelan in your closet. Who's worried about Venezuela invading us? Like the sister said earlier, we don't have anything to worry about. The regime, capitalism, imperialism, they have to worry about the threat of a good example from Venezuela. So if this was a Republican in there, there would be tens of thousands of people out here, and there were tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people out here protesting Bush's two wars. You know, let's divorce our anti-war activism from the Democratic Party. We cannot simultaneously be pro-Democrat and pro-peace. To be a relevant movement, we cannot support people who promise more war ever. To be relevant, we have to say humanity is more important than which political party has that house or the house down the street. Right? So please, in 2016, if it's Hillary versus Jeb, you can't say we loathe Hillary. You can say that. But don't say, but if we don't vote for Hillary, then Jeb will get elected. Do you need any more proof that Barack Obama is a sociopathic war criminal? Do you need any more proof of that? Is there anything else that he needs to do to prove that? And we're here to say that people all over the world, not just the people in this country, but the people all over the world have an existential right to be free of U.S. imperial domination. And we stand in solidarity with the people of the world and the people here in our inner cities who are battling the same forces, just in a different location. So let's go. Let's make a loud noise. A loud noise. Hey, we're not against war. We're not against all war. We're against the empire. And the empire. Thank you.
Thank you all for being out here. Somebody asked me to say the name of our brother, Danny Schechter, so I'm going to say that. And go out and critique and analyze and protest and make the media the way that he would want you to. And we will all be better off. That young man that was attacked by police in my town of Charlottesville at the University of Virginia this week was seen and felt and understood by everyone around him. It was an act of racism and an act of militarism. The police now are trained by the Homeland Security Department, armed by the Pentagon. This is militarism come home, but people see it. They feel it. They see it up close. It doesn't look like soldiers getting on a plane and going to disappear in a distant foreign land looks. It doesn't look like someone sitting at a desk pushing a button looks. It doesn't look like this president on Tuesdays in that house going through a list of men, women, and children, picking which ones to have murdered and having them murdered with a push of a button by someone else at his command. And people don't know that. You talk to tourists around this square, and it's not that they approve of these one-sided slaughters that we call wars, of these drone murders without knowledge, without Congress, without law, without justification other than the name Democratic Party. They don't know because they choose not to know, so you have to tell them. You all are the people who actually oppose war regardless of party and seek out knowledge because you found out about this and you're here. The Wall Street Journal 2 days ago had a column proposing that moving forward, we're going to have drone aircraft carriers that are going to release countless numbers of smaller drones that are going to not just kill people, but impose also targeted hurting, which means instead of killing the person you're after, which God knows they can't do anyway, killing that person's loved ones and neighbors until you've hurt them enough with your killing. And they're selling this technology to every nation on Earth. And you've got drones seen flying around nuclear power plants in France. These madmen and madwomen are going to kill us all with war making if we don't put a stop to this, if we don't change this. And this militarism is what this country does. It is the majority of what this country spends money on. It is what the person in this house sees as his or her primary job. Militarizing the world, selling the world weapons, launching wars around the world, attacking people around the world. And someday, they're going to go so far as to get a war going with Iran that's seen as partisan and people are going to be here with us. They're going to get a war going with Russia that people see as apocalyptic and people are going to be here with us. Or they're going to put a Republican in that house and people are going to give a f*** again. And we're going to be, I'm sorry Cindy didn't say it, I have to say it. These wars, my God. They're going to have a Republican in this house someday. They're going to have a white man in this house someday. There is going to be a day when people give a damn and we're going to be organized and we're going to be ready and we're going to have strategic plans and you all are going to be the core of a movement that is going to take the war-making leader on this planet, the United States, and turn it into a country with a culture of peace. And I'm going to be there with you, and I'm going to, and it's going to be an honor, and I'm glad you're here today.
You've just been listening to Voices, the activist David Swanson, and before that, Cindy Sheehan and Carl Dix from Spring Rising, the protest held outside the White House on Saturday to mark the 12th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq and the 5th anniversary of the invasion of Libya. At the White House, On the Ground also spoke to two young activists in the crowd who connected the issues of war abroad and war at home.
My name is Michael Sampson.
You're out here with Fight Back News, and you're also with the Dream Defenders. Tell me why it was important for you to be out here today.
It's important to be out here today because the war overseas targets black and brown lives, and as a person, I believe that our lives matter. And a war overseas is a war at home as well. So we can see how they are invading, how they invaded Iraq, or they're trying to invade Iran pretty soon. They bombed Libya and overthrew a leader there. They have reckless regard, the U.S. does, for how people our people, especially black and brown people. So that's why I'm out here, because you have to show solidarity with the movement overseas, with the people overseas who are fighting against the U.S. and its treacherous wars.
So if people want to reach Fight Back News, how do they get in touch with Fight Back News?
Fightbacknews.org.
Okay. Or if they want to reach you, how do they reach you?
You can reach me at my Twitter, at Brother Flourish.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Tay. I'm with the Revolution Club Atlanta. I'm traveling with Brother Carl Dix, and we're on tour to spread April 14th throughout the whole nation to shut down the country against police murder, police terror, and a genocidal program of mass incarceration.
Right. So I heard one commentator say recently, oh, there's been no protests. The protests have died down. And I was listening to him, and I was saying, well, you know, it's winter. So you're letting them know that it's not over.
Yeah, that day is a day. It's not just a moment. It's a movement, like the guy was saying earlier on the stage. This is the beginning of a whole thing. And the reason people that are going inside, basically, is because last year, the authorities are coming down on this with arrests, mass arrests, with false promises, and anything else to get people out the streets, because they don't want people in the streets. With like with the two murders up in New York with the officers, they try to demonize the protesters. They try to confuse people and get people in the streets. People's in the streets last year in the cold with Eric Garner and Mike Brown. It was cold out. I was out there in the streets with them, so I already know. But people are going to come out this year on April 14th, and that's the day you got to know about to stop everything.
Okay, and if people want to know more, how do they reach you?
You go to stopmassincarceration.net, and then you find out more about shutting the whole country down and organizing with other people on April 14th. Everybody has to know about that day.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
As the Spring Rising Anti-War Coalition left Lafayette Park on Saturday in a march, dropping symbolic wooden coffins on Capitol Hill and in front of the offices of various war contractors and profiteers, another demonstration, an historic demonstration, took place organized by the Dalit people of South Asia. The demonstration was the culmination of the first global conference on defending Dalit rights, which was held on the campus of Trinity Washington University. The purpose of the global conference was to increase awareness of the injustices visited upon an estimated 260 million caste-affected individuals worldwide who face caste-based discrimination, exclusion, inequality, and violence. According to the organizers, every day Dalits are forced into slave and bonded labor, denied access to communal water resources, and refused service at public establishments solely on the basis of their caste or descent. Dalit women and girls themselves are victims of rape and murder, with countless numbers forced into sex trafficking. Well, with me today to talk about the issue of Dalit rights is Zoe Sherinian, Associate Professor of Ethnomusicology, Women, and Gender Studies, and Affiliate Faculty School of Music at the University of Oklahoma. Welcome to On the Ground, Zoe.
Thank you so much, Esther. It's a privilege to be able to speak to your audience.
Now, the conference was the first of its kind. Can you tell us a little bit about the significance of that?
In some ways, I think that there were some predecessors, and let me just mention one, that there was a, in 2001, there was a UN World Conference on Race at Durban, and there was a very strong Dalit presence there, and also at the various economic and social forums. One happened in Mumbai, I think in 2004, there was also a strong Dalit presence. But I think this was the first, you know, global conference on Dalit discrimination that was specifically oriented towards these issues.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the background of Dalits. You know, there was a lot of African-American solidarity at the rally on Saturday. And so a lot of people would probably like to know, you know, about the history of the Dalit people, more about their origins, and in addition to, like, what they face today.
Absolutely. And, I think you used the phrase, the black people of South Asia, and I think we can talk about that. Caste discrimination is related to race discrimination, but it's not exactly the same.
Okay.
It's discrimination based on hereditary descent and occupation.
Okay.
It's a system of oppression that's legitimized by Hinduism, while practiced by other religions, including Christianity and to a degree Islam, within South Asia. But it's also, it's not just a religious system. It's also reinforced by social and economic structures. And the real key thing right now that needs to change, or that people believe is the key to change, is same-caste marriage. And what we need to do is not have, we need to have inter-caste marriage. That will end this system. So discrimination, again, based on hereditary descent and occupation. Dalit people in South Asia do tend to be darker skinned than upper caste people, particularly Brahmins, but so much of what's going on here is more about the kinds of jobs that Dalits are forced into and have been for millennium, like cleaning toilets, sweeping streets, and bonded agricultural labor. What's been really fabulous in the 20th century is the movement for Dalit rights led by Dr. Bhimrao Ramji Ambedkar. And he's really known as the father of this movement from the 1920s. He came up with the term Dalit. So traditionally people were called by their caste or jati names. So in Tamil Nadu, where I do my work in the south, terms like Pariyar and Chakliar were applied to these folks. And now this sort of umbrella term of Dalit is used. And this is a self-selected term of oppositional politics. It's an anti-caste term, which means broken or oppressed.
Okay.
And so people of the different jati groups can come under this one umbrella and say, no, you know, we are Dalits, and it's a conscious term of opposition. The problem is it gets conflated with in saying, well, Dalit means caste, but it's really an anti-caste term. So, and the problem is that there's even among these groups that would be called untouchable or outcast, there's even subcaste divisions and discrimination between them. So we're trying to get rid of that by using the term Dalit.
Okay.
That makes sense.
You know, we're going to take a break right now.
Okay.
And when we come back, our callers will have an opportunity to join the discussion on the human rights struggle of the Dalit people by calling 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. I'm Esther Averam, and I'm talking to Zoe Sherinian, Associate Professor of Ethnomusicology, Women and Gender Studies, and Affiliate Faculty of School of Music at the University of Oklahoma. So we'll be right back, and you can call in at that time. Stay with us.
Dalit rights! Dalit rights! We want justice! We want
justice!
We want
justice!
We want
Dalit rights!
Dalit rights! We want
justice!
We want Dalit rights! Dalit rights! We want
justice!
We want
justice!
I want it.
Yeah.
Yo soy un Congo de la madre,
África.
Venimos el Congo de la madre,
África.
No trae un Congo de su madre,
África.
Somos del Congo de la madre,
África.
Yo soy un Congo de la madre,
África.
Venimos el Congo de la madre,
África.
No trae un Congo de su madre,
África.
Somos del Congo de la madre,
África.
Soy un Congo de la madre,
Congo de la madre.
Soy un Congo de la madre,
Congo de la madre.
África, África. Pero café con leche. Vivo aquí lao, arrecotao, arrecotao, tao. Vivo arrimao, arrecotao, arrecotao, tao. Vivo la vida, crédito, como no. Inventándome una, todo el día ando yo. Antes tenía todo pelado, ya estoy pelado. Vivo remendado, esta me la han quitado. Hoy es la fecha de corte, ¿cómo? Que no te importe. Viví como loco en el norte, ¿cómo? Que no te importe. Yo soy un Congo de la madre.
Yo soy un Congo de la madre,
África.
Venimos el Congo de la madre,
África.
No trajo un Congo de su madre,
África.
Somos del Congo de la madre,
África.
Yo soy del Congo de la madre,
África.
Venimos el Congo de la madre,
África.
No trajo un Congo de su madre,
África.
Somos del Congo de la madre,
África.
Suena bomba con el techno. Hoy vamos a la discoteca. A ver, me bambolea hasta que se quede. Suena bomba con el techno, hoy vamos a la discoteca, a ver, me bambolea, hasta que se quede inquieta.
Llegó la noche, me pinto de colores, me pongo mis olores y llamo a mis amores. A todo color, sudo del calor, la calle está fría, aprieto a la mía, hoy hay fiesta.
If you're just tuning in, that was the Venezuelan group Bitwaya on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition, on WPFW Washington 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam, and with me today, talking about the issue of Dalit human rights, is Zoe Sherinian, a professor at the University of Oklahoma. And, you know, before the break, you know, we were talking about kind of like the origins of a lot of this discrimination. But can you talk about how it was impacted by the colonialism and the British presence in Southeast Asia?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I mean, in some ways, I work, most of my work has been with Dalit Christians. So many Christians, really even starting from the 1700s and maybe even earlier, converted to Christianity. Many Dalits converted to Christianity because they felt that they were at the bottom of the pile in the Hindu hierarchy, and that Christianity ideologically provided for them a sense of equality under the religion, that all people are children of God. Now, that wasn't always practiced within the church institutions in India, and still is not. There's caste within Christianity, but 70% of the church is Christian. So, and there were times when actually colonial leaders, or, you know, British leaders and missionaries actually supported Dalits, educated them, gave them opportunity to go to school, defended them in court, these kinds of things. So, you know, it's a mixed bag. Well, you know, it's important, yes, of course, that India is independent. Many Dalits felt like, you know, that led to a social and political system that continued to oppress them.
Okay.
What's really interesting is that Dr. Ambedkar is the writer of the Indian Constitution. He's, again, the leader of the Dalit movement, the contemporary Dalit movement. And he wrote the Constitution based on the U.S. Constitution, and tried to write in representation for Dalit people, a kind of separate electorate. But actually Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, prevented that from happening.
Wow.
So it's a really interesting history.
Hmm. Okay. You know, we have a few callers, so we want to make sure we get them in.
Absolutely.
I think that Mr. Ray, one of the organizers for Saturday's demonstration, is actually on the line. Are you there, Mr. Ray?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you. What's your comment you'd like to make today?
Well, I was just calling in. I was invited to call into the show, I suppose, to share a little bit about the conference itself, but I'm so happy to hear Dr. Sherinian on the show with you today.
Let's
she was
speak,
wonderful to meet. Peace to you. Good to hear you again. And, you know.
So I guess I'll pose to you a question I posed to her earlier about the significance of the conference and maybe for our listeners, you know, why now?
Well, I think there's a lot of interesting parallels as to why now. I mean, it is 2015 and we're still, you know, facing a human rights injustice in the Dalit issue. Insofar as nearly 300 million people still subject to caste discrimination, which includes all forms of discrimination, gender, ethnic, economic, you name it. Caste discrimination sort of covers all of them, in a sense. And the fact that, you know, we're so advanced in our worldwide technology now, I think that this issue that has been very well hidden, it's even referred to as a hidden apartheid in some instances, is now something that cannot be covered over or avoided or ignored, because there's enough capacity within communities themselves of the South Asia, be it in India or Nepal, particularly among the younger people, who are very technologically savvy and who are also very much subject to this discrimination. And so they're raising their voices, using technology as a way to bring greater awareness from the global community to their apartheid. And so this conference really reflected a historic achievement in that it was one of the first times, if not the first time, that there was such a collaborative effort among groups that are Dalit-focused, themselves many are Dalit member groups, that were coming together, convening in the United States, particularly in Washington, D.C., to raise awareness and to rally support from the U.S. Congress, from the President's office, as well as urging the United Nations member states to adopt the relevant documents and drafts that have been presented over the past couple of years, ranging from, you know, resolutions in Congress to condemn caste-based discrimination and untouchability outright, as well as other documents that have, you know, come through the United Nations that are providing basically the protocols and ways through which this can be addressed.
Okay.
To be effective.
What is the status of any of those, are any of those documents at a stage where the public can provide any kind of support in terms of social media, in terms of contacting the White House or their member of Congress?
Well, definitely. In terms of the U.S. Congress and House Resolution 158, which is the most recent iteration, there's House Resolution 566 that Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton introduced last year in May, and then this year, just the day before she came to the conference, where she was a guest of the conference, she issued House Resolution 158. So we are certainly encouraging listeners out there who are outside of the district in particular, because we know in the district there's really no gravity, there's no vote generally as far as that's concerned. I mean, obviously putting our support behind our congresswoman, our representative there, is important, but what's of support to her is outreach to other area states such as Virginia, Maryland, urging the representatives of these states to really get behind this resolution. There is some support for it so far, yet more support is needed. Now, obviously, the nature of the Congress at this time is such that an issue like this is very hard-pressed to get the attention it deserves. But if the people do get behind it, they recognize the human rights travesty that's happening here, and they see to it that this does receive due attention, then it will get some traction. So that's one thing. And then as far as the member nations of the United Nations, contacting the United Nations relevant to the countries in question. So if any of the listeners here, for example, are from other member nations, and even those of the United States, contacting the United Nations to let them know that, you know, the draft resolution that's there with them concerning racial discrimination, and particularly work and descent-based discrimination, is something that needs to be adopted officially and really taken in seriously. So that is something that does come from the ground up, though, as your show even is titled On the Ground. So we appreciate that.
Okay. Well, thank you. You know, I want to play comments from Saturday's rally. I believe the speaker was Vidya Karuna. I want to make sure.
I'm not sure in question who
well, that's very good speed, man. We can catch up with the ID later, but we want to play her
Thank
remarks.
You.
They were very powerful in terms of Dalit rights.
It is such a historic moment that we have all gathered here from different parts of the world. Yes, and we have come to assemble in front of the White House and to make this point very, very clear. We can't breathe. We can't breathe simply because we are denied our human rights. When animals can have their rights to go and drink from the wells of the people who call themselves upper caste, there is nothing upper about the upper caste. They are the dominant caste. They have taken out, denied the humanity and the human dignity of people. So in 2015, when we can claim that people have conquered space, we, the Dalits, are in a moment to say, please realize, recognize that we are human beings. We need the support of sisters and brothers from across the world, simply because when we raise our voice in our own places, very often it is said, why do you want to wash dirty linen in public? Come back home, we will sort it out. But now we want to say that there is no going back on our struggle. We have put our feet forward and we seek the solidarity and support of Black Lives Matter movement, all the indigenous people's movements, people's struggles, simply because no one is human until all are human. And no sister, no brother is a full human unless and until every human being is human. And therefore, we are all connected in our solidarity, in our support, and in our faith. Jai Bhim.
Okay, those were remarks outside the White House on Saturday at the historic demonstration for Dalit rights. So do we have an ID on the speaker? I have Vidya Karuna, was that right?
Yes, okay. That is correct.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we have another caller. I want to make sure we try to get have our callers have a chance. So just say your first name and where you're calling from. Not there? Okay. All right. Well, I'll continue my conversation with Zoe and
sure.
Is it Kuare? You know, the horrible abuse, rape, and even murder of Dalit women is a chief concern I heard mentioned on Saturday. And in recent years, of course, the world has learned more about what appears to be a rape crisis in India. And so I'm wondering how much of that crisis is connected with this direct targeting of Dalit women in this and whether how the two might be connected.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Dalit women have always been subject to daily forms of violence, as have Dalit men. But Dalit women have a particular situation in that, in villages particularly, upper caste men feel that they have every right to go into what are the untouchable ghettos and do whatever they want with Dalit women. And I think this is similar to the situation in the United States during slavery. And this continues today. There was an incident in North India this summer of 2014, in which two young women had to go, they went out to use the fields for a bathroom because many villages, many houses and villages don't have proper bathrooms, and they went out after dark, and they were raped and then hung from a tree and killed by a group of upper caste men. And you know, it was a huge outcry, but at the same time, it's not unusual. This kind of thing happens all the time, and so all the publicity that's happened around rape, particularly in the urban areas, as a kind of almost like payback for particularly urban women feeling like they have the right to go out and have jobs or be out with a boyfriend, you know, to go to a movie, that kind of thing. You know, that's one thing, but this kind of daily violence that Dalit women experience, sexualized violence, as well as all other forms that happens, particularly in the villages, is just so common.
Hmm. And much of it unreported, which is important to understand. Oh, much of it goes unreported. You know, so we get glimpses of it, as in the case from last summer, but with certain measurements that are being put in place, there are new ways to be able to determine where these violations are happening more frequently. And that's part of the hope to being able to curb this, is by being able to monitor and document exactly where these issues are happening. Because, you know, before now, it's been, as Dr. Sharenia is sharing, it's happening every day. It's such an enormous rate.
And it's the issue is also with the police, that there are laws in place, but they're not being reinforced.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Let's go to our caller. I think we have them back now.
Mm-hmm.
Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Kidane, Washington, D.C.
Okay. Thanks for calling in. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, my question is it true that their number is 300 million? And if that's true, why do we call it India the largest democracy? And my second question is that, why did Gandhi find it more valuable to fight against the British and preserve the unity of India and Pakistan and ignoring this big issue? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And, you know, that's a really big issue, and I think you all can take it. Well, we need to actually answer his question in about 2 minutes. So whoever wants to take that, Zoe or Mr. Ray or...
Yeah,
go ahead, Zoe.
I think the there's been different numbers, but I think the 300 million at this point is within India and other places in South Asia, Bangladesh, Nepal, yes. Sri Lanka. I think it's maybe closer to 240 million just in India alone, in terms of numbers.
Yes.
And I didn't quite get the last question about Gandhi. Why did he choose to fight against the British as opposed to addressing these issues?
Yeah, because I think you mentioned earlier in your comments that he opposed these constitutional protections that would have been written into the Constitution for Dalit.
Correct. Well, you know, Gandhi was a centrist, and Ambedkar was very much on the left. Gandhi was ultimately killed by somebody on the right, a Hindu nationalist. But Gandhi, you know, Gandhi was fighting against the British in the liberation movement of the nationalist movement, but he didn't, and he wanted to maintain the Varna system, these distinctions, and say that we should give respect to everybody at every level. Yet when it came to these constitutional changes, of the idea of having a separate electorate or a separate representation in India's parliamentary system, he opposed that. There were already Sikhs and Christians and Anglo-Indians who had that separate representation, but he thought that would divide what he called the Hindu majority, the kind of 80% Hindu majority. Yeah, and if you take 17% of that away, yeah, you're gonna divide that. And he went on to a fast on to death, which I think is a kind of action of violence, not non-violence. And he threatened this if Ambedkar did not take away his proposal for a separate electorate. And Ambedkar, as a result, did take it back as a compromise.
Okay. Well, you know, we have just probably touched the tip of the iceberg when it comes to this issue. And we'll definitely have to have you back again and, you know, continue this discussion and follow the resolutions and all the documents that are winding their way through the United Nations related to the rights of Dalit people. I want to thank my guest, Zoe Sharenian, from the professor at the University of Oklahoma, and also a thank to Mr. Akua Ray. I kept saying Mr. Ray because I wasn't sure of the pronunciation of the first name, but for calling in, who was an organizer for this week's conference and demonstration. Also, thanks to Michael Byfield for his production assistance with today's show, and to my engineers, plural, Michael Nasella and Michael Vernon today. And thank you so much for listening and for the folks who called in. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can now listen to all of our shows and past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. Now stay tuned for Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice. Peace.